well.
You know, it feels off. We're recording a day early, Graham.
We are recording
like,
a day early.
You know, I don't even know where I am right now.
I don't know. Coming here on a Monday, it doesn't make sense to me.
It just
the roads look different.
It does. It's like, you
the
know,
entrance was closed.
The sun's not shining quite as bright as it normally does in Burbank. Yeah.
Something was just a little off.
Yeah, I don't know.
I felt off.
All the colors, it's everything just, it's, I don't know. People's can't put my finger on it.
People's heads were different.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
insane. I just couldn't quite.
It's night.
It's not nighttime. All right, it's all getting changed up.
Yeah.
Episode 431, everybody.
This is pretty exciting. We got a lot of movies we're going to talk about. You know, we did a streaming binge on movies this week. We did. We're going to be talking about, like, Father, Flavors of Youth. Batman versus Two-Face, and we even get to Batman and Harley Quinn.
Oh.
So, and we may or may not talk about Mission Impossible. We're not sure. There's been some dispute whether or not we've spoken about it or not, and whether or not we've seen it.
I'm pretty sure I saw it, yeah. But I can't.
We can either confirm or deny
that
we've seen it or not seen
know.
It, nor have we spoken or not spoken about it. So it's a mystery.
If I were to have said knowledge of such film, I don't know I would be disposed to be allowed to.
It's entirely possible that we were about to speak about it, and then our memories were wiped by a secret government agency.
Sure.
And we weren't allowed to speak about
it
anymore.
I'm giving a vague, cryptic secret agency response so that I can't be pinned down for anything.
You know, confirm or deny.
I don't,
can't do either.
If it was to have been a movie that said person might have seen in such environments, I cannot confirm or deny that I was or was not there.
No such agency.
Halfway to 862, you guys. Very excited.
Well, we always like to have, first...
Thanks to everybody who came out to Dynasty Typewriter. That was a fun show.
That's exactly what I was trying to say with all the wrong words.
I saw you going down a
direction.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, that's exactly what I want to say.
I was like, Chris, don't do it.
Incorrectly.
Don't do it. Yeah, it was a fun show. Thanks for everybody
really
who came
fun.
Out. Gareth Reynolds and Eric Griffin did a great job. We put
beautiful space.
Beautiful. I love that theater. What Jamie and Vanessa have done with that theater is so awesome. And it's really cool if you... if you live in LA, obviously, but even if you're coming to visit, go check out. They're doing really cool programming. It's this really amazing, like, alternative comedy venue. It's a theater that was built in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, intimate.
But they actually sunk some money into restoring it. So the seats are comfortable. It's really well put together.
But kept the charm of it.
Kept the charm, exactly.
And the staff was really cool. It was really, I cannot say enough. And they're doing cool stuff like you can be a member where you can just go to unlimited shows. And I think there's sort of another tier of membership where you get sort of discounted tickets. It's a blast. That Mexican restaurant next to it was great.
Yeah, it was really fun.
So check it out. We put the episode, I put the audio for the episode up at the Patreon. So if you're a $10 Patreon member, you get the full audio from that episode.
What? Bonus content, Graham?
Bonus content.
Yeah.
That's what Patreon's all about.
We really appreciate you guys supporting the Patreon. It really helps pay our bills and keep us going. So we want to, whenever we have extra content, we want to give it to you guys first. And also it's retroactive. Like if you become a patron... next month, you get access to all that previous
content. All the back
content.
Back catalog.
So it's not like, oh, well, I missed it. I'm like, no, you can still get it.
No, you did not miss it.
Yeah. It's archived.
I was looking for that word. I couldn't find it. It just seems too expensive.
Eventually, you and I will get the right word, but never together. So let's introduce our guests, first-time guests. And we always like to mix it up. You know, a lot of times we have comedians on, we have actors, producers, but... we always love to have independent filmmakers on. So it's really exciting because we want to always support their work and support what's going on in indie film. And
we know what going into debt is all about to make a movie.
Yes, and we understand. You know,
we're having financiers go into debt.
Yeah.
Is it, do we get gels for the camera or do I pay my car payment?
Yeah.
You know.
Stuff like that. Those kind of questions.
The filmmakers behind the movie The Black Cat, ladies and gentlemen, Grant Gary and Peter Pardini.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So tell us about this movie, where people can see it, because I know we've had, like, Jimmy Pardo's in it.
I'm in it.
You're in it?
I'm in it.
How'd the shooter do, Jimmy Pardo?
Yeah, Jimmy was great.
He's awful.
Well, Peter, there's a story. He touched my shoulder recently.
Jimmy Pardo?
Oh, yeah. he actually came to one of our... It showed at the Lemley in North Hollywood, and Jimmy came to that showing. And remember, he sat, like, right behind us by himself the whole time. And then right as the credits rolled, we get a, both of us get a tap and a, great job, guys. And then he just darted out.
The only way you'd know he was there during the movie was the right. the random in the background. And then he was gone.
But Peter knew Jimmy from a previous project and just asked him.
Yeah, we wanted to make a movie for cheap. And there aren't a lot of ways to do that, as you guys probably know, just without it looking really bad.
Yeah.
So we came up with the idea that we should do like a kind of like a satirical look at the making of a documentary. And that would allow us to shoot documentary style most of the time if we had run out of money. Mm-hmm. Basically shoot stuff for free. And we ended up shooting a whole feature film in 10 days for around $30,000.
Mm. Nice. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And because of the documentary style, we were able to do most of it improvised, so we could shoot fake interviews throughout the day. We could shoot narrative scenes with the budget that we had.
And we shot on multiple cameras, too. So when you look at the doc, there's a lot of B-roll that you see in the film as real scenes, basically. And then the rest of it is on an Alexa, which is kind of like, I like to tell people that's like the main timeline.
Right.
The narrative feature is on are on those, and then you see all the other stuff and all the other footage.
Yeah, so then did you guys, so how in-depth was the script? Did you just sort of say, like, did you kind of come in loose, like, well, this scene, we want to kind of talk about these things and let the improvisers go, or?
Well, we had developed the story together so that the two of us knew exactly where it was going. So the first shoot that we did most of the interviews. So the movie's about this, like, adult child who's making a documentary, and he has no clue what he's doing, and his mother, his billionaire mother, who we never see in the movie, is financing it, and he's trying to make his own true crime documentary because he knows he is an acquaintance of an actor who was accused of a crime like 10 years ago, and so he's trying to make this thing to prove to his mother that he's a worthy human being. And so what we did was, during the interviews, he plays the actor, and basically, we just had backstories for every single person in the movie. And then when they came into those interviews, they were answering questions based on what they knew about themselves, not on a script.
Yeah, so Peter would Peter would print up like a one-page story for that character, and he'd hand it to the actor or email it to them or whatever. Mm-hmm. They'd read it. They'd get to know their character. Mm-hmm. And then they'd actually be interviewed as the character.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because most of the mockumentaries that you see, unless they're like Christopher Guest or, you know, Spinal Tap or whatever, I can't stand when the mockumentary is like scripted and you can tell they're hitting a beat at the end of the line. So we wanted it to kind of be awkward and feel as realistic as possible.
Right.
And did you guys kickstart? Like, how did you?
Yeah, we did one of those Indiegogo.
And got enough to shoot it.
We aimed for $75,000, but only got $30,000.
But that's like, because
You got the movie shot.
That was the other thing. We kind of had a rule, and I think we did it on our last previous project too, which was we always said not making it's not an option. So we just adjusted the budget to fit our needs, and we knew from the beginning we were probably gonna be shooting on those two different mediums to keep costs down anyway. So it was kind of easier once it got to it, and there was stuff that just the two of us shot together.
Little fillers for story and stuff.
I heard once or twice, because I looked it up again, that James Cameron shot that one scene in Terminator where he first gets there, he's walking across the street, and it was just him and Arnold, no permits, no nothing. It was just him behind the camera, because it was like the last thing they never shot. And they just showed up one day to some street in LA. And so
I wouldn't be surprised to see James Cameron with a 35mm camera.
Did he build?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
So there was a few stuff that I know there was a day, part of the shooting where, like, it was just Peter and I just to get some stuff, fillers.
Yeah, like the old clip of Robert Pattinson sitting in his car where the paparazzi won't leave. And he's just literally sitting there for like 4 hours. And he's like, I'm not going to leave. And so we went and shot stuff like that, where it would be like behind a camera filming him across the street sitting in a car, because you can just go do that for nothing.
Right.
Right.
The movie ended up being, shot it in 10 days, 85 minutes. So it's a full feature.
Where did you shoot most of it?
Fresno, California, which is our hometown.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, we love Fresno. Don't ever do that. It was crazy though, because We told them we were going to be filming there, but nobody ever stopped us. Like, we were on the street corner.
No, there's a Fresno.
Did you register the project with the Fresno Film Office?
Yeah, there's a Fresno Film Commission.
Every city's got one.
Which I still have never been to, and I imagine it's just a desk somewhere. I don't think
it's
somewhere.
A place. Yeah. It's a P.O. box or something like that in a strip mall.
We'll get back to you in a couple of years.
But they have an email address, and they say... I tell them we're filming there, and they say, okay, great. We'll let the major cross streets, the people in that area, know. And then you never hear anything else.
Their claim to fame is that they were part of a deleted scene from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But we were on this street corner with this huge Alexa, like, filming, and cops are going by and no one's stopping, and it's like we would have already been fined like $30,000 if we were here in LA. Yeah.
We were filming in a part of town that was kind of like, if you walk up and down Melrose here, you get a lot of interesting characters. And so I remember there was a few people that walked by that kind of just live on the streets anyway, and they're like, is that a camera?
It is. Please sign this release.
But that's the thing, when you shoot in the smaller towns, they're not even cognizant that they need to crack down on production.
It's a lot of pointing.
Yeah. They just don't know what's going
on. But we were also pretty our crew was very, like, we didn't, it's not, we weren't a big, you know, we had a couple like Suburbans with equipment in it. We didn't have like big
like eight people.
You didn't have a grip truck.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
That's too rich for our blood.
Yeah. So, well, that's really cool.
And then where is it? Where can people see it?
It's on iTunes now.
Okay.
Yeah. I think today or the rental, I think it's like you can rent it now. I think it's today. But it's available. You can purchase it or you can rent it streaming on iTunes.
Through iTunes, okay.
Yeah.
Black Cat.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And it was in like 70 film festivals around the world.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we made the choice to just cold email like 700 film festivals and just say, hey, we have this movie. Here's a little bit about it. We'd love to screen at your festival.
Some people would say, like, there's a stigma to doing that. You don't want to. But we had the best of luck with it.
Did you use the services? Did you use, like, Without a Box and all those places? Or did you go,
Film Freeway,
just, I'm getting the festival programmer's email and emailing them directly?
Both.
You find the email on Without a Box or Film Freeway, and then you message that person. And most of the time, they're like, yeah, send the film. And then we got into probably 70 or 80, and we won over 10 of them. And
for best feature.
Yeah, our thought process was, it's much better to, for a small movie like this, to be seen by thousands of people across the country, maybe tens of thousands if you're in, you know, over 100 film festivals. But then if you're in only if you got into Sundance, that would obviously be great, but at the same time, if you don't have the money behind you to promote it at Sundance, there's a good chance that only 200 people will see it, and then that's it. So we found that, like, we were getting emails from people, like, in the middle of Ohio who would be like, oh, I saw a Black Cat at the such-and-such film festival, and it was great. Tell me when it's out.
So yeah, they immediately wanted to know where they could see it again, which was really cool. Because I tell people, I think it's great on a repeat watch, too, because there's a lot of things that you don't know until you're given that information, and then watching it again with that kind of like the Sixth Sense.
Well, every time you play, I mean, every time you play a film festival, it's like a promotional bump. I mean, that's why, you know, you play 70 of them. It's nice. It keeps the, you know, the press and the,
Viewers are viewers.
It was in France and Germany and, was it Greece that it was like, we thought it was in the wrong category.
Like five film festivals in India.
Oh, there you go.
So we're huge.
But one
in
of them
India.
Accepted it into their documentary category. And we were like,
oh, really?
And we're like, we're over here. It's not a documentary. And they said, we realized that. However, it had element. Which one was that?
It was actually one of the bigger, there's a fairly big documentary film festival in Chagrin, I think, in Ohio. And I think like Colin Hanks was opening it that year with his, the Eagles of Death Metal documentary he had. But that one got, we even went into IMDb and saw that there was, I saw that someone had left a review on there, and I was like, oh, shit. Because you're always worried that, like, somebody's going to, like, trash it or something, and that's only review that's
always
there.
Interesting to see when you're so immersed in it, like, what it looks like to a single audience member? How did right. they perceive it?
Specifically, a single audience member at a film festival.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who has no clue what's coming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Speaking of introducing people at film festivals, when we were in the Studio City Film Festival, I got to meet Claudia Wells.
Mm-hmm. From?
Of Back to the Future. Oh. One mm-hmm. and only one mm-hmm. before she was recast with Elizabeth Shue.
Wow.
Wow.
So I checked that. I checked that off my bucket list.
So did the Studio City Film Festival. Yeah.
And how is she doing?
She is well. She left. Were you there that night?
No.
She left like halfway through. Her friend was there or something. She was really sweet, by the way. I just want to add that. But she had a friend out of town that had to like hop on a plane.
We don't want the Claudia Wells army coming after us.
But no,
she's active on Twitter.
She has a store in Studio City that she sells like vintage like clothing.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is really cool.
And here's the phone number and email.
Well, guys, go to iTunes and check out The Black Cat.
Absolutely. Now, let's,
it's just so people know, it's just Black Cat.
Black Cat.
If you search The Black Cat, it might not come
up. Okay, good to know.
Black Cat. Okay, so let's talk about some streaming films we watched. All right. You know, a little slow theatrically. So
it was
a little slow theatrically. We went streaming. Father, let's talk about this movie.
Okay.
I want to know, did it break the Netflix shitty movie streak?
Kinda.
Wow.
It kinda did. Mm-hmm. I saw the trailer for this and I was like, oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is she's left at the altar.
Mm-hmm.
She's a workaholic. Her dad, a strange father, is
Kelsey Grammer.
Mm-hmm. He shows up and shenanigans ensue. And she was all set to go on this cruise for her honeymoon. So she goes with her dad.
No.
Doesn't it sound like it could be horrible?
Honestly, the way you just pitched it sounded kind of charming.
But, it actually only was.
But I'm in the middle of Cheers right now, so I'm pretty much in for anything else.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He and you know, you watch it and you go, there's some cliche paint by the numbers moments.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some great stuff. I mean, Kelsey Grammer is great in it as this estranged father. And as we sort out, no spoilers here, but like we unpack where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they put in, right, so they do this cruise ship thing of they all sit at their assigned seating. So then they become friends. So this whole group is sort of in on everything. Everyone's either like on an anniversary or they're newlyweds or whatever. And then here's this father-daughter common that's so. But there's some really touching moments in it. I was like, wow, it felt like, and it really, we talk a lot about some of these Netflix movies feel like they just couldn't have been sold anywhere else. And so Netflix is just picking them up.
Right.
The Netflix originals.
Mm-hmm.
But this felt like, oh, this was really neat. And Seth Rogen's wife directed it.
Yes.
Lauren Miller Rogan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Seth Rogen, it's not all about him. He's a small little character.
And I like the trivia where his character's name is Jeff. He's offered to smoke a joint in Jamaica. He declines it and claimed he's never smoked anything in his entire life.
Yeah. That was just such a fun little inside joke. Like, that's this notorious stoner.
For Seth Rogen now, at this point in his career, he can now do the self-parody thing.
Yeah.
He's so famous for doing something off camera.
So, but it was, you know, there's a couple of cliche supporting cast members, but
don't we need that though?
But
need
I more I was of just, those movies. I was just going to say it works so well. I feel like now too, we have kind of decided we like when there's comedy and it has heart, mm-hmm. and even if it's cliche, it still works because we still like it. You know,
yeah, it
even if you
not
know,
work.
Even if you know, like in these like rom coms where you know exactly what's going to happen,
right?
You're like, you're still like, this is great. I wanted them to get together, or you know.
Well, it's the same. And they use a rom com formula.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's fine. They you know, they estrange, they get thing, and there's a fight and a thing, and this isn't a spoiler alert. This isn't, you know, how the ending.
Well, it's like I recently watched The Greatest Showman, which I really liked, and a lot of people really liked it, and you know,
and a lot of people hated it.
Yeah, a lot of people.
It was one of those movies that was polarizing. that I couldn't figure out why it was polarizing. It's like, it's, you know, it's a musical drama about, you know, P.T. Barnum. Like,
yeah.
Why would this make you love it or hate it?
But I, because well, we have to love or hate everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to just separate. But I feel like there's something to that, like a boy with a dream. And you can like that. Like, yeah. It's okay to like that.
And honestly, too, this was the perfect streaming movie.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. If you went and spent all this time and money to see this in a theater,
paid a babysitter,
yeah, that you might be like.
And now that we understand that that's a thing we can do, mm-hmm. I'll find myself saying I'm in the mood for that specifically.
Yes, yes.
Something that's 90 minutes. That's like, it's fun.
And you could just turn it off after 5 minutes.
And it's right.
It's bad.
Yeah.
If it blows, yeah, you're right. Not stuck there going, man.
Now I got to go to the front and ask for my money back.
I got to go to the money back.
Remember those days?
Or I'm going to stick through this or whatever. So it was that perfect thing. I was just sort of at home. I had some time. And I was like, I'm going to watch this. And I watched it over 2 days. Like, I could do that thing. Like, I'm going to watch 40 minutes.
I did the same thing with Ibiza on Netflix, too. It was like, again, 90-minute fun. Like, fun enough. You know, it wasn't like... I didn't have to waste all my time, waste all my money.
Mm-hmm.
And at Netflix, it feels like it's free to us, you know? So
that's what they want you to think.
Most people, it is free.
Yeah.
$140 a year. It's not free.
But yeah, it was, you know, if you're in that mood and you want some sort of, you know, it's like when you watch a movie, you're like, I know the good guys are going to win.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're going to solve the crime. It's about, they're going to, whatever. Yeah. Like, all right, let's do it.
I feel like it's about accepting
it. So the casting
it.
Was good, too, right?
They're great.
Like, Kelsey Grammer was good.
He was
the father,
really good.
You said.
And I'm blanking on the actress's name
from
Veronica
Forgetting
Mars.
Sarah Marshall. Yeah, Veronica Mars.
Wait, why am I blanking on her name?
Frozen. What's her name?
Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
Kristen Bell. Yes. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
She's great as the... You know, and she's the workaholic and the thing, you know, like, and, you know, the left at the altar rom-com, you know, we've seen that a million times. And this, I was like, how are they? And it was, I was like, oh.
Put it on a boat.
Kind of makes sense. You know, like, the believability of that.
Yeah.
Like, every time there started to be some, like, that would never happen. They would put some little thing in there, like, oh, okay, that's.
So they were cognizant of it.
They were. They were cognizant of it. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect 90-minute streaming.
Yeah, big-budget Lifetime movies with high-caliber actors.
Yes, they are. It's a great way to put it.
Because I know someone who writes, he does, like, doctoring for Lifetime movies, and he says that you are not allowed to be a writer on it. Like, they just give you the formula, and they've hired you to write that formula in a few weeks, and then they go and make that movie.
Yeah.
So these are kind of that, but with Kelsey Grammer, who's an amazing actor, and Kristen Bell, who's a great actress, and yeah.
And I feel like, too, the whole movie takes place on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship. I gotta feel like they went, hey, you know, what if we kicked in a little bit? Would you guys...
So it wasn't like a fake cruise ship name? No.
And boy, they did every activity that comes in your all-inclusive trip, Chris. I mean, it's really...
So I'm going to guess maybe you got to see the logo a few times?
A couple, three times. I got to see every activity that is available on one of their fine cruise lines.
It's like Sandler saying he does the movies so that he can go to Hawaii or he can go to Africa.
Yeah, I think that's what this was too. Someone, Royal Caribbean said, you know, we'll put the cast and crew up. You guys get a cruise.
It's like Kelsey Grammer's like, I love cruise.
It was like Morgan Spurlock's documentary, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold.
Yeah.
When he
that's what this was. And they're like, you know, this.
Tom Wonderful presents.
This big moment between the father and the daughter. Well, we could do it in a restaurant, or we could do it in a lagoon. So I was like, why don't we do it there? You know, so.
Hey, okay, why not?
All right, you know, we'll just have turquoise water and bikinis. Yeah. That'll be
private
better.
Lagoon with a waterfall.
Yes, that's exactly where it happened. So it's like, yeah, it's a nice plug for cruise ships.
So I saw it also a stream movie on the same service called Flavors of Youth. Oh. This was an anime movie. made by the people who did Your Name, which I loved, and my kids loved it too, which was a really interesting anime movie about two basically teenagers who body swap, but they can communicate with each other.
Okay.
And then it also goes into like a science fiction time travel movie too, but it does it in like a really cool, believable way. So when I saw, this studio made another film, I saw it. This one's a little different. It's actually an anthology where it's three separate short stories about life in China. So it's always interesting, like, when you see an anime, you're like, oh, well, this is clearly set in Japan. I'm like, oh, no, they're setting it in China this time.
Yeah.
Shake it up a little. But the first story was really interesting. It set up basically somebody reminiscing about their childhood and about the food that they ate as a child and how that kind of defined them growing up and as they looked at adulthood, like through a meal or a certain food, which I thought was really interesting, especially to be done in an anime style. It actually reminded me of, and this is a weird connection to make, but if you guys ever read Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, and it what it does is it goes through his youth growing up in the summer. It's a very specific thing. The sights, sounds, smells of him growing up, from everything from what they ate to the way the grass smelled when people were cutting it. And this really felt like an anime version of that, like the first part of it. I mean, these are slow. My kids were bored. These are dramas. These are romantic, you know, stories and coming-of-age stories. And they tuned out almost immediately. But I was really intrigued by it because what I love when anime does is it goes into areas that anime doesn't normally do.
Right.
Like, you know, some, you know, really cool retrospective about growing up and what it was like to be young in a specific part of town and what you were eating, and make that a metaphor for how you are as an adult, I thought was really interesting.
I feel like so. That's so important now, too, because everyone's saying the whole, we've seen it before. Right, so yeah, right. To do something different is good, unless, yeah. like what you're saying, when you're yeah. in the mood for that specific yeah. category.
Well, in anime, too.
I know what I'm going to get.
Doing it in that kind of way, yeah. I think, causes the audience to focus more when they... Because when you just do it realistically with mm-hmm. actors, and I mean, the best I've seen when with doing the nostalgia, talking mm-hmm. about youth, and is Master of None actually recently, mm-hmm. with the way he does those flashbacks in that series. But I think when you do it in the cartoon form, it kind of takes on a new life and almost is more realistic in a right. way mm-hmm. because you're seeing it through an emotional lens rather than.
Yeah, it really felt that way. And the second story was more about like a model who was aging, and then, you know, the younger models were coming up after, and she realized that she had a very short shelf life, which mm-hmm. is something we've seen a lot of times before. So that was kind of the flattest of the three. And then the third one was really interesting. It was it goes exactly to what you were talking about with the last movie, whereas it's a romantic coming-of-age story. You want these two people to get together. You've seen it a million times, but it has that charm and magic to it where you're like, no, you're still rooting for him. You want it to happen. And it was almost like a period piece where they recorded messages to each other on cassette tapes and would give them to each other. And then that's how they kind of conveyed their feelings as they were growing up.
I like that.
So it was that was probably my favorite one, the third one. And then, but it's a short film. It's like these, you know, three shorts put together. I think it's, you know, even under an hour and a half all combined.
All total.
Yeah, all total. But the animation is beautiful. It's got great production value. You know, every shot is really just carefully kind of almost just like meticulously put together. Like the animators really.
Yeah, they say it's an hour and 14
time.
Minutes.
Yeah, yeah. They went that extra time of like, even if it's just a landscape or a scene that's kind of like an establishing shot, very detailed, you know, evokes a mood, like really a lot of love went into this film for sure. So, but you know, when you have an anthology, they're not all going to be, you know, amazing. That's just what you get when you have an anthology. So I thought out of the three, one was really good, one was good, and one was okay. But it wasn't one that you went, oh my God, this
that's
is
not
awful.
Bad though.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. So it's definitely worth a view, especially I will recommend if you can catch Your Name somewhere. That's kind of hard to find, but if you can, it was really good.
Okay.
So, and then I saw a couple other animated movies. I saw Batman versus Two-Face and Batman and Harley Quinn, two very different Batman movies. Batman versus Two-Face was another movie in the world of the 1960s Batman. Adam West, Burt Ward, Julie Newmar all mm-hmm. did voices. William Shatner does Two-Face, so
oh, wow.
it's all a Whoa. Great 60s throwback type
Flip
of...
Con.
Yeah, is yeah, yeah, exactly. Like? It was exactly like that, yeah.
Does he just go into one of his songs from his album?
So, yeah.
Like, picture yourself on a boat on a river.
You know, so it was one of those movies that I'm watching, and I'm like, if anybody didn't watch the 60s Batman, they're going to have no idea what the fuck is going on. Like, there's no... They're not going to get why it's funny. They're not going to get, like, well, this is stupid, unfunny Batman. They're not going to get the camp. Because the humor was very specific on that show. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a set up punchline. It was a very campy show where the humor wasn't always as obvious. Like, if you watch it now, you realize what they were going for more than maybe if you saw it as a kid. So, you know, I'm watching this animated movie, and it was really a tribute to that. It really was. It was Adam West. He finished recording this before he passed away, so he actually finished this film. But I'd be curious to see if our younger fans who didn't grow up with the show, if they watched it and if they enjoyed it or not, because they don't have that frame of reference. Like, this was a very specific project. If you liked Batman, the 60s version, I think you'll like this. If you don't, it's going to be harder to get into because it's such a specific thing.
I would watch those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even as a kid, like, they're great. Mm-hmm. I got to meet him last.
Adam West?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Like right before he passed, too. Mm-hmm. There was that show Powerless that was on for a while, and mm-hmm. I was working on it. And he was, it's the whole show was about Bruce Wayne's cousin Van Wayne, who sells insurance for superhero damages. And so it was.
I remember that show.
Yeah, and it was great. Like, it was a mm-hmm. fun show, and he was a guest star on an episode, mm-hmm. which was amazing. Everyone was like so happy that he was there, and he was a jokester in person.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
We were standing next to each other, like right before a scene was starting, and we were in an elevator, and the doors closed, and he just leans to me and he goes, "Oh, what's my line again?" And I was like, "Oh," "Oh no, he doesn't." Oh,
he turned into the Seth MacFarlane version.
I was like, I can't help him right now. And then he does the like, "Oh, I gotcha." He was just messing with me. And then I had obviously a moment of relief, but he was a great, mm-hmm. That little interaction I had with someone, I mean, that made my day, you know.
Because the movie really feels like a tribute to him, like a tribute
That's
to Adam
awesome.
West. It really felt that way. So if you're a fan of the old school Batman, check it out. The other one is much more modern, Batman and Harley Quinn. Now, Harley Quinn is actually a character that was created for the Batman animated show, mm-hmm. and then just blew up in the comics. She actually went in reverse. Like, wow. Normally it's the comics yeah. are first, then the characters.
I didn't know that.
Transfer to a TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she was created specifically for the show, and then just blew up, and now there's a million comics.
Is
about
this
it.
One like in that? I watched the Killing Joke. Is that part of that same?
No, what they do with the Batman animated movies is they mix up kind of like the worlds that they're in. Like mm-hmm. Like you have like there's. And it's you never know exactly which one it's going to be. Like Killing Joke kind of exists on its own, mm-hmm. Where then you have the there's DC animated movies where it's kind of like an extended universe. You have the Batman ones, then you have like Batman versus Two-Face, which is 60s Batman. Then you mm-hmm. have this one, Batman and Harley Quinn, which is an extension of the original Batman animated series. So the character design is the same. The character voices are all the same. It's like Kevin Conroy and all the same people. So. Nightwing, although they adult it up a little bit, like you know,
sure.
With Nightwing and Harley Quinn kind of get together,
nice,
and you know they you
so
know,
it's a rom com,
yeah. And there's a few suggestive scenes in it.
All right,
but, love it. But it's really fun. It's funny. Our friend Padgett Brewster plays Poison Ivy.
Oh, cool.
She does a really good job.
Oh, she's great.
And. So it's two very different Batman animated movies, which I find very interesting. It's like they can't get the live action shit right, but they're doing all these different interesting things in the Batman animated universes. Mm-hmm. So because you've got, you know, okay, you can do the Adam West Batman. You could do the Batman animated series Batman. Then you can do like the more grittier Batman and Son and with Damian and
that'd be
and
a fun
Ra's
live
Al
action
Ghul
one to
things.
Mix all of the different worlds into one, and then all of the different Batmans run into each other.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That should be the movie to get it right.
That would be really cool. That's got to be in development down there somewhere at DC Animation. Yeah. So definitely, you know. But I enjoy both of them.
Okay.
So check them out.
Mm-hmm. And well, I just want to ask real quick, Grant and Peter, if there anything recently you guys have seen that stood out to you that you really like?
I let's see.
Can you confirm or deny you've seen Mission Impossible and Fallout?
F9.
I had a dream about Tom Cruise. I'll talk about that. I saw an interesting documentary I watched this morning, actually. The new Chris Bell documentary, A Leaf of Faith. It's about Kratom or... Kratom. I don't know how people pronounce it.
I don't know
what
that is.
Chris, do you know Chris Bell? He did the Bigger, Stronger, Faster documentary Trophy Kids and Prescription Thugs. And now he's doing this one. It just, I think it just came out today on Netflix, streaming on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
What is it?
It's Kratom. It's a leaf that they're kind of claiming is, I think it's from Indonesia. And it's a leaf that's been, people have been taking for hundreds of years. They chew it or they grind it up and make like a tea out of it. But it's basically something, the argument is that it's something safer than this opioid crisis that we have in America that everyone's taking all this crap for and dying every year from. And it's really interesting because we don't know much about it. People are taking it. I found out in the documentary that you can buy it like at just a smoke shop or behind. It looks like those supplements that are in like
a little. Oh, so you can get it here now.
I don't know.
And it makes you high or?
No, no, no. See, that's the thing. It's not a drug to make you high. It's something to combat like pain, but it's not, it doesn't have, from what I understand, it doesn't have psychoactive effects.
And it's not a highly addictive, because like OxyContin is basically just heroin.
Yeah. So it's, from what I understand, it's not. But there is a part in that film where they kind of tackle that, like what makes something, you know, like why you're taking it makes it addictive versus just, I don't know. So, but it's, I watched that and it's pretty interesting. I mean, I like all of his documentaries anyway.
That's
so
fascinating.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Wild.
We are in, and Eric Griffin said this at the show, at Dynasty, that we're in like the golden age of documentaries.
Yeah.
Because I think the cameras are so cheap now and you can make a movie for 30, 40 grand or whatever, that like the documentaries.
When you have an avenue.
Yeah.
Now you have an avenue. Right. If you want to say something, you can say it to everyone and people can, if it's interesting, they'll find out about it.
Yeah, you can put it on the internet, which is before documentaries were only like art houses and colleges or whatever.
It would have been so impossible thinking about making a documentary in the 60s and 70s before the internet. Like, I made a documentary a few years ago and there was a ton of archival footage in it and I don't know how I would have done it without the internet.
Well, you watched that. I mean, that's why there was a handful of documentaries that came out in the 60s and 70s, and they were very like funded by news organizations or something like that. They were very sort of journalistic.
It wasn't until Thin Blue Line, the Errol Morris one, that they really sort of changed to being entertainment in a good way. Like they could be entertaining, but yeah. For me, I saw Hereditary and Isle of Dogs, and I think those were probably my two favorites of the year so far.
Now, I can confirm I saw Isle of Dogs. Loved it. Thought it was fantastic.
Everyone says it's great. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but everyone says it's great.
You know, you'll especially like it because it's got a Japanese flair to it. Like, it was one of those things that, even though it's about dogs and a trash island, it had that... That it had like this Japanese culture feel to it. It was really cool.
It's cool to see Wes Anderson too, to be able to kind of control every single shot exactly how he wants to. Because even if you watch Grand Budapest Hotel or any of his other movies, you can see the level. I don't know how he does it, how he's able to control every frame so well, but he can even take it that one step further with animation.
Well, it's we had one guest on. We haven't seen Hereditary, but he said it was so scary that he's like, well, you know, he put it a very subtle way. He's like, well, you know, when I went to bed that night, I did leave the light on a little longer than I would have.
Well, I was just impressed it didn't completely fall apart at the end because so many horror movies are so great, and then the last 30 minutes, they either over-explain what was happening or they go into some weird supernatural realm that, like, takes you out of the realness of the world. But this one kind of did all of it and somehow was... like the perfect ending to a horror movie.
Oh, cool.
So
I want to check it out for sure.
For sure, check it out. It's great.
All right. Well, we've got some sponsors today,
Graham.
Look
at that now.
Yeah. We're going to talk about ZipRecruiter. Well, Graham, you know how hard it is to hire somebody.
It's impossible.
Yeah. It's every business needs great people, and there needs to be a better way to find them. You know, something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right person to see it. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how to find them. So what they do is you join ZipRecruiter, then they post your job to all these different job sites at once. You don't have to go to like individually to each one. It saves a ton of time.
If you're running a small business, this is the way to do it. You don't have the money to hire like a headhunter or something like that. You go ZipRecruiter.
And they can even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. So, but, you know, we want you guys to try it for free. You know, we know a lot of you listening have small businesses, so it's a great place to start, especially when you're expanding to where you need to hire people. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. It's written down 3 times on the copy.
I figured you weren't, like, having a seizure. Some Patreon sponsors.
Yes, we got some Patreon sponsors. We got our two mainstays.
The mainstays, mm-hmm. Johnny Rulon.
Johnny Rulon. Look, you didn't even have to look him up. You knew it was Johnny Rulon.
Right there.
Yeah. He's promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's available on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an extreme of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And our favorite performing arts charity, the Audacity Performing Arts Project, produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Check them out at audacityperformingarts.com. That's audacityperformingarts.com. And, you know, we were talking about your movie earlier about where it's on iTunes now, but you can get it rental and purchase right now?
I believe so.
Okay.
Don't quote me.
If not, it's purchased, but it will be available.
It will be, yeah. It's coming up. So one thing I wanted to mention about the film is that, you know, we never really actually said what you guys did on it. Peter, you were the writer and director, and Grant, you were the actor/producer. Mm-hmm. So,
let me ask you guys this. How did you guys come together to make this project? Have you done other stuff in the past?
We've known each other since second grade.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So we've made stuff in the past, and it's always been
from third grade on, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Eighth grade.
Yeah, we did a lot of stuff in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the shittiness out of the way in
grade school. We were always blessed to have teachers that would just kind of let us do what here's the school's camera, whatever, and do whatever you want. There was always a group of us that were doing that kind of stuff together.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. But
that's how it has to. He's right though. That's really is kind of the hidden ingredient that you can't really make that happen. It has to kind of happen where you have someone outside of your family. You have to have you sort of have to have a supportive family that helps. But I think there has to be someone who's not your parent, who's like older than you and is like, hey, go and do this.
Yeah.
And that's okay that you want to do that because.
But not in a creepy way.
No.
Not in a creepy way. No hands on lower backs or none of that stuff.
But. Here's a gun. Go do what you want.
I support Follow you. Bring heart. Me back
in. But it's nice to not have like a structure in the beginning because then you, as a child, you're allowed to just explore all these ideas that you have and no one's telling you not to do it.
Right.
We had one of those Brownie Super 8 cameras and my brother and I would just go make crazy things. Like we would edit on camera. And
there was no one there to say, oh, maybe keep that shot a little shorter.
No. You know it was just like, we're doing it this way.
You need coverage, son.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember, you know, the Bolexes, you would just wind.
Wind them?
Like, all right, you've got, you know, how many seconds for a shot before the winding runs out?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it.
I think we were the last generation to have to edit off of tape. Like, not even because in grade school, we had another friend and we would go to his house and we'd make movies off. We'd make them on the VHS, and then we'd have to sit there, and it was almost like editing film.
VHS C.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wow.
That was the smaller ones.
Yeah. We were the last generation to not have cell phones, to not have all that. Like, when we started out, and it's kind of interesting now that
That's why we don't consider ourselves being lumped in with millennials. We're in our 30s, but we made that, like, transition.
Right.
We were part of going, like, not knowing what it's not. Like, not having cell phones, like you said.
Well, yeah, and when we were in high school, we had a group of, like, 5 friends, and we were the only people in the entire school making movies. And now I feel like it's, like, 80% of people are making films, and it's
right.
No, you're just, you have this HD thing in your pocket that
the
can
technologically,
just,
the barrier is just down.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you guys this, because Graham and I did this in film school. Did you ever cut actual film with, like, a razor blade?
Nope.
That was, I think we were the last generation to do that.
We had a flatbed editor, and you had to cut your scenes, and you had to hang, like...
Because we did a short film on 35 millimeter.
A few years before this one,
In 2012. And everyone was thought it was like crazy at that time because you're like, you can use digital cameras now, you know. And we're like, yeah, but we want it to it look
still looks
awesome.
Better.
It looks so good.
I know.
And
true.
The irony is that we convert it to digital.
To edit
you can turn
it
yeah. to edit. To edit. To edit. And that's a good you know compromise. But I still think that film. People say you can't tell the difference, but I can. It's different.
It looks so good.
It's getting close. It's getting close, but
still lacking the warmth. Mm-hmm. Of
I was just gonna
film.
Say it's so warm. Mm-hmm. Feels so good.
Like I remember when I made the short film Hit Clown that's on the CFN YouTube site. Is you know I wanted to get it. Submitted for an Academy Award, like for the short film section. Mm-hmm. And that's when they had all these crazy archaic rules. It not only had to screen at a theater, it had to be a film print. So I actually had to go to a negative cutter and make an actual film print of the movie just to qualify it for the you know for the Academy Awards. So it was just to submit it. So, but you know, and then of course, like a year or two after that, like, oh, all those rules have gone away. I'm like, really? Well, that would have saved me hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Yeah.
I remember when we did that though, how paranoid both of us were because we never like handled film before. And we were driving the equipment truck back and forth from LA and we were just like, it was a rental. And we're sitting with these boxes stacked up, like hoping
that's
that
the whole movie.
We didn't have to slam on the brakes and they fly through the windshield and then we run over it and then look in the back and it just blows up on the freeway.
I will
and you're
say
like checking,
though,
did we get insurance, production insurance?
I will say no, it's much scarier now though when you're on set and you're dumping cards and then you have to erase those cards and you hope that when you get home the hard drives aren't
corrupted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There goes all that footage.
I was editing something the other day and my hard drive just stopped. It wouldn't mount. I had to go to a data recovery place. But I mean, the things that go through your mind when you're like, was there something else on that drive? And it's just like you said, it's just gone. It's just like just disappeared.
Meanwhile, I have all the film from everything that I've ever shot on film and it's just there and it's perfect.
It's crazy. We lost the B and C cameras on one of the critical interviews for earbuds. And all we had was the single camera, and thank God, but it was like we shot it in Japan with Sanai, Sandy, big fan Japan.
We actually, that was where we're thinking about, well, maybe we should make a claim because we did. It's for lost footage.
Yeah, it was like, and we were like, we were back shooting in Indiana, and I remember the crew told me this, and I was like, so let me see if I got this right. they're like, the most important shot of the movie, the one shot we cannot duplicate. This isn't like one of the comics in LA. We could, all right, we'll go back.
Right.
Like with someone who's not a performer, who like, you know, in that documentary, interviewing the non-performers to get them, that's a thing. Like if it was one of the comics, we could duplicate that and just say, they're performers. And it was like, Japan, we barely had the money to go do that. And I was like, we only have one camera angle. And they're like, and I go, and
it's of his hand.
They wanted to get that.
And that was all digital.
I remember
it was all digital.
I remember getting that phone call from you.
And it was just like, I literally had to go, and I was like, I had to go, okay. And I literally had nothing to say. And this crew, all these young guys were all just looking at me like,
I accept this.
Is he going to blow up? Is he going to, like, I just kind of went, okay.
I'm such a fan of just hard copies when it comes to anything. Yeah. Done. Like I printed out our email today.
like, you know, that's in the cloud.
Cause
right?
you know, cause my thought was like, well, I have it on my phone, obviously, but what happens when it's not on my phone?
Yeah.
Where is the address? Did I, you know,
you have hard. Yeah. Like
we have some guests. We kind of,
I print out memes.
No, it was a crazy thing. And and honestly, the single shot was fine and it's cool. And it's a beautiful storyline and everything. But I was just like, It was really hard, and I had to call Chris, and I was, and these crew guys, I'll give them credit. They were like, "Man, we checked. We're sorry. This tech thing happened. They were backing up everything, and just some fucking crazy tech thing happened,
right?
You know." And I was just like,
You took your crew out for a public execution after that, right?
I didn't talk to him after shooting for like a couple of days. And I was just like, cooling shooting. Off, usually we'd go like, after shooting, I'll go out to eat. I was just like, here's some cash for dinner. And I
was here's your fucking per diem.
I remember one face. Of the other guys came in the room and after he goes, Graham, you know, these guys, they feel bad. And like, we were already in another city and you know, they need a pep talk, you know? And mm-hmm. I said, okay, they're not getting one tonight because I'm just not in a place to give one tonight. But then I remember after we were getting done shooting and I went to a movie and then the next morning was our last shoot day for the whole thing. And they really, they had done an amazing job. It wasn't like, yeah, we got high and fucked up. Like,
no,
it was just one of those things that happened. And the whole interview, we did use, there was one, we had the A-cam, so it worked.
Yeah.
But I a couple days, then the next morning, I was like, guys, you've got a great job. And they are great guys. They're guys I would hire again. But I remember that just being like.
We should launch
something no one wants to deal with.
No.
Bring back the hard copies campaign. I think we should launch that.
The HCC.
I'm still not over.
Let's kickstart analog. Let's
do it. I'm still not over Blockbuster being gone.
I think it's coming back. Not Blockbuster, but I think that there's going to be a kind of offlining coming up in the next like 10 years.
As a rebound of what's happened.
All it's
going
to take is some massive iCloud corruption hack and 10 million people lose all of
everything.
This stuff.
Well, people already left Facebook at what it was like 6% of people left Facebook over like them sharing that information.
You know,
like,
like streaming is great. Like there's no doubt about that. But I tell my wife, I'm like, I can't trust that HBO or some of these is going to stream it all the way through when I know if I buy a DVD, it won't let me down.
Yeah.
You know? And, we still, every once in a while, we'll go buy a new Blu-ray.
I feel like I'm the only one buying a Blu-ray and CDs. Like, I'm, like, still buying CDs.
Me too.
I'm like, all right, I'll digitize them and put them into, my phone. But what if it gets erased? Then
there's something human about going and picking something up and looking at it.
Oh, God,
and, like,
it's the best.
Like, when you go to Blockbuster and you're there and you're looking at the movies, it's so different than scrolling through thousands on Netflix.
It was such an amazing experience to do that. And now, well, you have the red box where if there's, like, one person in front of you, the store's busy. It's like, and even that, it's still like a touchscreen. Mm-hmm. But like what he's saying is that like holding it, even the same with books.
Vinyl has made a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with music, and I think people there is that longing for it.
People are going to go offline in the next 10 years, and it's going to be a concerted return to, I don't want to be on the grid. I don't want people to know my every move all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's
weird.
It's
people
weird
can
that
see your viewing habits and stuff on certain websites.
It's weird that it's got to that point where it's like liberating to, I'm not, my phone's not on me for an hour.
We had a comic on the show, Brett Weinbach, who doesn't have a cell phone. And I remember I saw him at a comedy festival and I was like, hey dude, you got to come on. What's your cell? And he goes, I have a home phone number. And I don't have a laptop or a smartphone. I have a desktop. A landline and a desktop computer. So when I'm at home, I'll answer some emails. I'll return my phone calls. And I was like, oh, I was like, you're my hero.
And he's probably so good about
that's
doing
considered
that
off
work
the grid
too.
Right.
Because you do it once a day.
Because it gets to the point where the people that like, it is so accessible, they never respond. Or
shit
it's
falls
like,
through the cracks.
Or it's just like constantly everyone going, sorry for the delayed response.
Well, let's imagine. Let's imagine you're like a really important person. You're like you're Spielberg. You're the CEO of Amblin. If you are going to work, you're going to the office, you are reachable at that office. And then if you go home and someone's called your home phone number, you are still always reachable. So there's no like, oh, well, I'm Steven Spielberg, I need to be available all the time. First of all, he's not even answering calls anymore. I doubt those are the people who actually don't ever answer their phone. Like, I just feel like we've gone way too far with it.
No, but it's the thing you said though. So what Brent and we asked him this on the episode and he explained, he goes, and he probably gets more done because he goes, I sit down at my desk. I go through
it's
my
reserved
voicemails.
For that. That time is reserved for that. As opposed to having it in your pocket all day.
I have to answer emails while I'm waiting at the bank, or I got like all this. No. That happens during these times in this place. And I
need
like,
to do a story.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure he has like the most comprehensive emails too, because sure. he's focused and they're detailed as opposed to the in line, just, okay, thanks.
Yeah. Some misspelled, like,
which now
when
Gmail
you asked
just,
him like three different questions.
Yeah.
Gmail like, now, kidding. If you guys have the Gmail app, it'll actually just form a response for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So I'll the open new one, my email the updated and it'll go, one. Okay, thanks.
It'll
or,
say that.
Sounds good. There,
you
great.
Get like three or four options oh now God. On Gmail. And I was like, am I going to be that person that uses that? That's
I
not
do.
Even me talking now.
Just some robot speaking.
Yeah,
for
it like has like a little email
sounds like
prepared.
A good plan, bro. Wow.
Yeah, that's what it's yeah. literally. It will read yeah. your email
see
and
at
it
the
will
club.
It'll calculate a response.
Well, that's what's wild about it is it's they're reading the email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The you know, one of the things about the physical copies is that like when we did with earbuds when we made the DVD is we made it specifically like it was a cool case that would open and we put on the side a place to actually get autographs for all the podcasters and comedians
awesome.
That were there. So people, when you buy the DVD, you can actually use it as something to collect autographs.
That's
with.
Great.
Well, I've noticed mm-hmm. more comics because that was a thing as a comedian on the road, you'd have your CD or DVD of your act and now everything's download digital. So, but fans still want that physical thing.
Absolutely.
So I know some comics that have started to, with their new albums, make like a cool download card mm-hmm. that has a cool logo on it and you can autograph it and then it just has the URL on the back or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I think a lot of people they still want that thing.
Something in their hand.
Because then,
yeah.
you know, one of the old Oprah episodes that I watched.
One of the classics.
Was one of the classics was about keeping stuff like that like in your home, you know, because like there's a story behind it.
Right.
Like someone comes, they see something on the wall and you're like, well, let me show you. Like this person, the author signed it or the mm-hmm. performer signed it. And it's like, that was this experience. Now it's like in your phone until your phone dies or it disappears.
As ones and zeros, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty soon we're going to be in blank rooms that just have nothing on the wall, and then someone will just press a button and out comes the TV. But then they close it and it's literally just empty. It's just a person standing.
We're all
in
standby mode just all day long.
So let's watch some trailers.
Let's watch some trailers. Mm-hmm. We got a couple of fun ones tuned up and ready to roll.
I notice you guys don't wear your...
We
yeah.
don't.
Your headphones.
If you want, you can't. You
yeah.
don't feel.
Yeah.
We were just trying to fit in.
It's kind of better without it, huh?
All right, here we go. Robert Redford is back.
Old man
hey,
in the gun.
Excuse me. Need some help?
No, I'm good.
Let me take a look.
Sissy Spacek.
You know anything about cars?
No, not really.
So, what did you say you do?
Well, that's a secret.
And why is that?
Well, because if I told you, you probably wouldn't want to see me again.
Who said I was going to see you again?
Would you? Well, let's take this place. Say it was a bank, and instead of that counter up there, that was really a teller's window.
Does this movie
and
get in
Sundance? And you just walk in, real calm. So you walk right up, look her in the eye, and you say, ma'am, this is a robbery. And you show her the gun, like this. And you say, I wouldn't want you to get hurt, because I like you. I like you a lot. So don't go breaking my heart now, okay?
You're not serious.
Excuse me, I'd like to open up an account.
Well, great. What type of account do you have in mind?
This kind. This kind.
You said he was armed.
He had a gun.
You saw him.
Well, he was also sort of a gentleman.
He was very polite.
He seemed like a nice enough fella.
Look at that. Is he smiling?
Gentleman bank robber.
93 robbers.
In 2 years.
You think you can catch him?
Yeah, I won't lie. I'd love to slap the cuffs on him myself. So I hope I get the chance.
Try another city, baby. Another town.
He spent his whole life locked up, except for the times that he broke out.
Somebody should have told him to quit while he was in.
Well, you find something you love.
Come following down.
I know exactly where I'm supposed to be.
You're never exactly where you're supposed to be, are you? Now, whenever I close the door, I think, is this the last time I'll ever have a chance to do whatever that thing was?
You know what I do when the door closes? I jump out the window.
Living is a gamble, baby. Loving's much the same.
Danny Glover.
Wherever.
Oh, Tom Waits, if he's in it, he's got to do a song in it.
There's an easier way to make a living. And he looked at me and he said, I'm not talking about making a living. I'm just talking about living.
That looks great.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Is there any way that he doesn't get nominated for Best Actor this year because it's his last
Very
movie?
Very unlikely.
Because he hasn't won Best Actor before, I don't think.
I'm still stuck on Danny Glover. Can we talk about that for just 1 second? Because, A, he's not too old for this shit anymore. Right. And he has anyone seen, I don't know if he still does it, but he was doing those commercials for a while where it was for some disease or that people have where they have uncontrollable laughter or crying, and the setup it's called like APB or something. It's a something bulbar affect, and the setup for this commercial was, I'm an actor, and when I act, if I do this or if I do this, I'm totally in control.
Wow, I don't think I saw this.
I did not see this. And, this sounds and crazier brilliant. Than the
and
Matthew
then, and I'm like,
McConaughey Lincoln. Yes.
And I'm like, well, yeah, that's acting. You can have control of these emotions. And he says, but for some people, they cannot control it. And I was like, whoa, tell me more.
It seemed like a Tim and Eric ad, but it was real.
It wasn't funny, though. The irony being that they couldn't stop laughing or something. But I don't know. So he's, but now he's back.
Well, this to me looks like The Gray Fox. Richard Farnsworth did this movie in the 80s that is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I got to see it on the big screen when it came out. If you've never seen it, it's not on like the AFI top one. It's just, it's one of those movies that's great.
The Gray Fox.
The Gray Fox.
I'm watching it.
It feels like it's like that old school Hollywood.
It is old school Hollywood. Yeah, yeah. Well, The Gray Fox was this premise of... he was a stagecoach robber who had to go to jail for 50 years. When he comes out, it's after the Industrial Revolution.
Mm.
And he doesn't know what to do. So he goes, starts robbing trains. And he's this gentlemanly guy. And that movie, The Gray Fox, is shot in British Columbia. It's got beautiful sweeping shots.
Do you know who directed it?
Oh, man. I'd have to look it up.
Because I love Richard Farnsworth.
It's so great. It's basically, you know, when he was doing that late in his career, like when he was in The Natural, he played that with Robert Redford.
Straight Story.
Yeah. The Grave.
There it is.
There it is. The Gray Fox. Came
82.
Out 1982. Directed by Philip Borsos.
7.6 is high for IMDb. Mm-hmm. For a movie that's not like that.
That's not Marvel.
That's not known like... modern day. I have not heard of any of this guy's movies.
Yeah, The Mean Season. He did One Magic Christmas. He didn't do it. There's nothing
after 1995.
Yeah, there's no.
He died in 95.
Yeah,
41.
Whoa.
He died at age 41. Young. He didn't have this like epic career as a director, but this movie, I would say, watch The Gray Fox. I bring it up because that's what I was thinking when I just watched this man.
What you just said, like, that was such a great hook, though, for the film, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, that sounds like it would be on the AFI Top 100.
Right?
Because those are all so different. You know, like, the movies that, in comparison to everything that you see now, and, like, I feel like that's what movie people are always looking for, that different hook.
And that's what this sort of...
That sounds awesome.
And this movie looks... I'm kind of pumped for it. Yeah. I love, you know.
It looks good.
It's the director.
Sissy Spacek. And
it's the director who's, he did a few movies or two movies with Casey Affleck before he did, like, Ain't Them Body Saints and The Ghost Story last year. I think his name's David Lowery, but I haven't seen either of those, but they both looked very I don't want to say film school, but just cinema history, like you're saying for this one.
So not the Frank Sinatra ghost story.
No, not that one.
All right. Next one is Peppermint with Jennifer Garner.
Let's bring this up here. Ladies and gentlemen, Peppermint.
Who's my girl?
Ooh, it starts with a first. Really nice.
My girl
whimsical
has
whimsical music
love in her heart.
Yep.
And snow.
Happy
in her
music.
Eyes.
Kid family scenes. What could possibly go wrong?
No, it's fine. Everything's fine.
Oh, whoa. I was guessing cancer. Not that.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Not a machine gun.
Sorry for your loss. We have three suspects in custody, but they're all linked to the Garcia cartel.
Oh, so this is Girl Punisher.
Willing to step up.
These cartels are no joke. They've got everyone in their pockets.
You've been through a terrible tragedy.
Maybe you didn't see what you think you saw.
That's him.
Maybe you've made a mistake.
Number three, number five, number four.
They did it.
Is it possible that your recollection isn't what you thought it was?
The evidence is insufficient to hold the defendants over for trial.
You think that you're gonna have justice? Make them all pay.
Here we go. Director taken.
And
I like how they don't use his name.
It's some French name. It's like some long French name.
Training.
Well, that's new. You honestly think Riley North did this?
Today's the 5-year anniversary of her family's murder. She's back.
Well, she did have that training from Alias.
Judges. Dirty cops.
What do I want? I want justice.
It's not a coincidence that makes this area low crime. It is low crime because of her.
At least somebody's doing something. Find her. I don't care if you have to burn the city down.
Watching someone take everything from you, it turns you into somebody else.
Social media is lit up with support for her.
She's multiple homicides.
Let's take a bunch
suspect.
Of lines from the Equalizer. And not to them.
I also feel like this is a movie that Ben Affleck would have been in 10 years ago, but now she's now trying to mimic her ex-husband's career.
I will kill every one of you, and then I'll pretty much wing it from there.
Next, it'll be Changing Lanes too with Jennifer Garner.
Pew, 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 you know, we talk about this a lot on the show. Everybody's getting their own Taken.
Yep.
I'm and, all for it.
And honestly, we're kind of suckers for him, so we'll probably go see this.
How much money would a movie with Oprah, but basically Oprah's Taken?
That movie would make a billion dollars.
I would go see that.
Easily.
Overall, kind of playing her like she was this beloved talk show host.
And then they took it all away.
Can
she got justice.
She breaks out the AK.
But she's in like what she wore like on her show. Yeah, like it's like in the middle of a show day.
You get a bullet. You get a bullet. Oh yeah,
that would make so much money.
But you get a car.
Yeah, just slow mo Oprah.
Just Oprah's
diving.
Rambo.
Yeah. Oh my god,
Oprah's Rambo.
That's it. Yeah, I would see that
Oprah's
so
Rambo.
Hard.
Yeah,
Oprah,
I
would
watch
listening?
Oprah.
Oprah,
mm-hmm.
Old Man and the Gun and Peppermint. You.
Right. She listens to this podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
she
someone
gets that
from
ping
Owen
on
does.
Her phone. New episode available. Everyone, hold on.
Oprah, love to have you come on. Please do a Taken.
Yep,
I love that.
We'll do a draft.
I love that.
So, all right, on DVD and Blu-ray coming up, we have a book club. This is the movie where it's ladies have a book club and they talk about the 50 Shades of Grey movies.
Oh.
I mean, or books.
Diane Keaton, right?
So, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Tag. Now, Tag, honestly, I thought this premise kind of looked funny where there are, you know, a bunch of adults still playing Tag, like through people's weddings. And there's one guy that's really good at it. That's Jeremy Renner. And, but I don't know. This movie just kind of came and went. It never.
I didn't
know.
I didn't hear much about it at all.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
There's this new trend in comedies, too, where everything has to be in slow motion in the trailer. You have to cut to a guy like getting slapped, and it's in slow motion, which I don't quite understand. But
well,
moving on.
Thank Kevin James for that.
Yeah. Here comes the boom.
All blurt.
Yeah. RBG, this is the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to check that out. And Mary Shelley, this was the pretentious, artsy movie about... Mary Shelley and about her writing Frankenstein. But check out the trailer because the trailer will make you probably pass on the movie. Because I thought it was a cool idea. Like, mm-hmm. I'd love to see like more of her story and what inspired her to write the movie, but the trailer made me want to do the opposite.
And fan feedback, just want to say I put a poll up about a week or so ago on the Patreon page.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite movies of the summer thus far? It's pretty interesting. Keep voting, and we'll read those next week. I picked about 12
oh, cool.
from the summer.
Yeah, so please check out the poll. And also premiering this week. You know, we're kind of in a dead zone now where it's like it's end of summer movies.
Yeah, this happens every year.
But not quite, award movies.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, well, there's no more special effects to release the end of August.
No more capes.
Yeah, and then there's no great acting. So now you're just going to have to...
You're going to have to watch Black Cat on iTunes.
There you go.
You're going to have to watch...
We promise there's no capes in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, unless you're into puppets and robot dogs, you know, that's it. Check out Black Cat. So the movies premiering this week are Kin, which is a fascinating trailer. You have to check out this trailer because it really looks like... somebody got a hold of some foreign money and made a ridiculous movie that makes no sense.
That's never happened before.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this weird... Somebody gets a hold of an alien gun and people are chasing them. Well, clearly there must be more to this movie. I'm like, nope, every scene is them being chased and him firing the alien gun. That's it. That's literally the entire movie. And it's literally the same scene over and over again in the trailer. And the next movie is Operation Finale. So I don't know if this is kind of one that, like, well, we'll kind of release it a little early about, finding Nazis with Oscar Isaacs. Or it's like, didn't come out quite as good as we thought. We're going to release it before the awards movies. So
that's what happened.
Is it one of those that was made like 4 years ago, too, and now that Oscar Isaacs...
It has that feel to it.
There's a lot of those that come out, and you're like, wait, why is Jessica Chastain in this movie? And it's like, oh, it was made in 2012.
Yeah.
And they're just now releasing it. Yeah.
So, all right.
That's our show, everybody.
That was a supersized show.
Big, high-octane one. once again, Grant and Peter, tell us the movie, where people can find it. You have a website for it, anywhere they can track you guys down online.
Just go to iTunes and search Black Cat, and you'll see it. It's Grant, Gary, and Peter Party, and you'll be the names that come up.
And the next three people that buy anything in the store get a very cool commemorative Black Cat postcard.
So go
on it, people.
Go to comedyfilmers.com. You buy some, you get a postcard, and then check out Black Cat. You guys, we talk about this a lot. You know, when you support an independent filmmaker, you're supporting independent artists. These guys scraped together the money and did a really cool thing and used...
It's an achievement to make a film.
It's easy, man.
Thank you. People forget it. It's a small business.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not the type you're used to, but it's a small business.
It's not just turning on a camera.
Yeah.
No. With a thousand things that could go wrong every single day.
And we tell people all the time, like, the support means everything because they're literally helping dreams that were in our head come to life. Mm-hmm. And, you know... Not everyone has to, but
and it's a cool movie. I mean, it's really unique. It combines formats, and it's kind of a very modern.
People have oddly more recently have been comparing it to The Disaster Artist, just because, and we never even thought about that because Disaster Artist wasn't out yet when we started writing this, and but the idea of this filmmaker making a movie, and the actor in our film, Doug Bennett, is just. He's so eccentric, and you like are not sure to watch him or not. It's like kind of his character in the film.
It feels
like
a little too real, which works for the movie.
So yeah. It's great. Fun. We really like the movie, and getting back to something being different, we think it's different, and that's really why people would be interested.
Now, do you have a Black Cat website, too?
We have a Facebook page for it, Black Cat, a film by Peter Pardini and Grant Gehry. Right. And then you can follow each of us on like Instagram.
That's great.
Where we post all the most recent stuff.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
Well, check that out, guys. Support the Patreon. You know, like, subscribe, and positive reviews helps on the iTunes and all those little cool ways to support the show. And thanks again to everybody that came out at Dynasty Typewriter. Yep. That was really awesome.
And if you're a new listener and you want to check out some of the CFN merchandise, we have Earbuds, the podcasting documentary, the Comedy Film Nerd's Guide to Movie book. And we also have digital downloads that you could check out as well. So there's a lot of CFN stuff, and of course the new CFN t-shirts that we got with the new logo, which came out really cool. So you want to check that out.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you to Grant, Gary, and Peter Pardini. Thank you to Aaron. I think he got arrested, so we have a different tech. Hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
Emma,
thank you, Emma, and everybody here at All Things Comedy. Totally different staff on a Monday.
Yes.
My name is Grant.
Yeah, she asked, are you guys live streaming? I'm like, oh, we haven't heard that question in a long time.
We haven't. Mm-mm. How about it? Mm-hmm. Well, my name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.